Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Extra Time. I'm James Taylor, and my guest this week has hopefully recovered from his marathon appearance on Big Pod a few weeks ago, and making his first JTET appearance of the season, it's Johnny Nicol. Hi Johnny, how are you?
Hi James, I'm doing good. It's good to be on here with you, for first time for both of us doing this together, and I'm glad to be on JTET as well, because I think the guys on Big Pod might have quite a tough week this week with all the nil-nils, but we've got plenty of goals and plenty of spectacular goals to talk about. How are you doing yourself?
Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, you've picked the right pod for this week, I think. We've got plenty to talk about. So let's get on with it, shall we? You picked four games you wanted to talk about, and you started, you'd like to start with Kanazawa against Kofu. This one finished Kanazawa 2, Kofu 3. Kanazawa took the lead, actually, after 5 minutes with a goal from Masamichi Hayashi. But Kofu hit three in quick succession. William Lira was on hand for a rebound after 16 minutes. Then Hidehiro Sugai got the second on 22 minutes. And Yoshiki Torikai added the third after 30 minutes. Fortunately for Kanazawa, Yohei Toyoda got one back in the 57th minute. That's Toyocopter number three for the season, for those keeping count. But it wasn't enough. Kanazawa lost, still winless at home. This one, 2-3. So, Johnny, what did you think of this one? And what have I done to upset you?
my team also lost at home, Gamba. So I thought, well, this game had the most goals, and there's also an incident we'll talk about later in the game that could have influenced things. But you obviously you're a Kanazawa fan, so I'll ask you some questions about them. But I wanted to talk about Kofu, because I think there's not been too much chat about them, and yeah, they're down in 14th now, and we had a little chat in the green room. I think the results haven't quite matched the performances yet. I know there were some protests about, like, Tatsuma Yoshida, who's obviously got a tough job in his hands at replacing, like, Ito in the hot seat. And, you know, I think John and I talked last season, teams that finish in that kind of third, fourth, fifth, sixth in J2 and don't go up, they're very much sitting ducks, aren't they, ready to be kind of picked off. And I think they've lost two or three players, like Mendes to Kyoto, and Nakamura went to Kashima. I'm not sure if that's the best move for his career in terms of playing time. Notsuda's been playing at Hiroshima after his loan. Izumi Sawa, I know he was injured at the end of last season, so it probably not too big a loss. And then I know Sho Araki's been injured this year as well, and Ryohei Arai, he was their captain. I don't know if he was out the team and he's back and he's out again. I assume it's an injury. Renato Vichy, the Brazilian they brought in to replace Mendes, he's been in and out too. And you mentioned again in the green room, they got an injury in defence here. And so some of the signings haven't quite worked, like Matsumoto and Ishikawa. But, you know, you get Motoki Hasegawa, he's really stepped up with five goals this season. He wasn't credited with any goals or assists here, but yeah, he looked very, very lively from the highlights I saw. There's a lot of first and second year pros like out of university in their team, so I think that they will come good. And I think you're asking about what have I got against you. I think maybe Lady Luck might have had something against you, because I think, yes, stats wise, yeah, Kofu have been playing quite well. They've been creating chances. They've not been going in, but I think in this game, the three goals, everything they hit sort of turned to gold, and also there's a kind of decision later on which could have led to a 3-3 draw. So you've watched the whole game, obviously, from a Kanazawa perspective. How did you see things, and what did you make of that big incident with Otani and Kawata in the second half?
Well, yeah, I was pleased that we took the lead, obviously, but what I was, because we finally made the most of a good start. For a lot of games this season, we've started well but not taken the lead and not scored early. Or we did what against Mito last week. We controlled the first 15 minutes and conceded in the 16th. Last year we had a big problem with conceding early goals, and it hasn't quite gone away. So it was great to take the lead. And then Kofu had an injury after 10 minutes for Fumitaka Kitatani. He did something to his hamstring or something like that, so he had to go off. But that enforced substitution and that tactical change actually worked in Kofu's favour, because they took control after that. And then they had a bit of luck, but they played really well. And I think partly they made Kanazawa play badly, and partly Kanazawa just played badly. Kofu were pressuring Kanazawa, and they were closing down all the passing lanes and all the options. So every time Kanazawa tried to pass it forwards, it was just going to a Kofu player. And that was partly because of the pressure and the positioning, and partly maybe the passing was poor, or the positioning of Kanazawa was poor. For the first goal, Riku Yamada made Keita Fujimura look really silly and really slow. And although Shirai made a good save, it fell right to William Lira, and he just had a tap in. In the second goal, I think Sugoi managed to get behind his defender. There was a few times where they managed to get behind Yuto Nagamine, the left back. Mm-hmm. And the third one, Torikai's goal, I think was headed back across goal or something, and he managed to turn because it went over the defender, his marker, and he turned and hit it in or something like that. So a bit of indecision amongst the defence. So things went well for Kofu in that respect. But yeah, that was the worst half I've seen from Kanazawa this season. The worst we've played. And I think in his post-match comments, the manager, Yanagishita, said that it was because of his tactics and that he'd apologised to the players for that, which I think is quite unusual from him. Mm-hmm. to at least say that in the press conference afterwards. He doesn't usually own up to the tactical errors. but yeah, we were much better in the second half and came out and as things were working, passes were going together, and Nagamine was managing to get in some good crosses, and another of his crosses led to Toyota's goal, which was a good header, the kind of header that we've been wanting Toyota to score. I think that's his main strength. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the disallowed goal, you mentioned it, so we should explain this one. Keita Fujimura took a corner, and it was the goalie was he tried to catch it, and it went over him, and he knocked it into his own goal. But it was disallowed because Hayato Otani was adjudged to have made contact. And when I watched this, I thought, yeah, fair enough, he did make contact. I don't think there's any debate about it, because it has been the case for years. If anyone makes any contact with the goalie, then it's a free kick to the goalie. The goalies are extremely protected, and rightly so, I think, because they're the most vulnerable. But when I retweeted, someone had made a video. They took a video of that incident, and a few people seem to think that was quite a harsh decision. So, what do you think of it?
I've watched it five or six times. And at first, I actually thought it was quite harsh. But, you know, you see in football sometimes that these things even themselves out. And I don't know if you remember, I think Okinawa Aussie might remember, but last year, Ryukyu beat Kofu 1-0 at home with a last-minute goal. I think it was a Rennie Keda header. And then the goalkeeper went to dive, and he bumped into a Ryukyu player on the line, and the ball went in. It was a kind of scramble. Yeah. So I think Kofu will say that justice has been done after that one, because I remember there was quite strong protests. Mm. Regarding the actual issue, I think Otani's biggest problem is the fact that he makes contact with Kawata before the corner's even taken. Like, Kawata has to kind of shove him off, and then he comes straight back in. So I think, because there was also an incident in 2020, Gamba against Kashiwa, where Patrick went for a header and Kim Sung-ju came out. And they kind of collided, and Kim tried to kind of milk the contact, I think was the judgment that the refs made. So I think the fact that Otani's already in Kawata's face, he's kind of touching him a bit, and then he moves away and then he goes back in. I think the ref's waiting to give that as a foul. And I think you would, on a lucky day, you might get that. But I think maybe 8 times out of 10, it's probably going to be, I'd say, rightly kind of called off in my book. Mm. But, I mean, yeah, obviously it's a disappointing result for you guys, but there's 10 games gone out of 42, so we're almost a quarter of the way through the season. So, I mean, there was a couple of questions I wanted to kind of ask you about Kanazawa. Like, okay, how have things gone versus how you thought they would? And especially in terms of, like, Kanazawa are a bit of an outlier, as I think we mentioned last year, in terms of very consistent team selections, which is generally fine if you're Yokohama FC or last year of your Jubilo or Kyoto, but it seems like, kind of judging by your Twitter post, there's been a few more tweaks. And also you mentioned like Nagamine at fullback is a kind of younger player. And I think it was mentioned a lot, like in 2020, a lot of younger players like Raisei Shimazu is someone who's kind of completely disappeared, but players were given a chance, whereas last year is more the veterans, whereas there seems to be a few more kind of younger players, the Matsumotos and the like in there. And the final question, if you remember all these, was about like, well, what I really like about Kanazawa is the kind of patience with Yanagishita. I know obviously Japan is not on terms with Europe. Like I think it's like the average like manager in England is like less than a year. But there have been a lot of quite harsh signings. We won't name and shame the clubs who have done it. But like, it's always, one of the things that surprises me, it took me so long to realize, like when you look at old league tables, you see someone in mid-table, you think, well, they were just mid-table. But the amount of teams and indeed players who have like one good half of the season and one bad half. And I think a lot of clubs, I think Verdi and Gunma probably have to be careful about this, that start the season really well, but then slip away. And kind of forget that maybe just our good run of form was at the very beginning of the season. It seems like Kanazawa from the outside have quite a realistic understanding of where they could be and where they should be. So I think you could probably make a case for all the 22 teams in J2 this season. In their year, they could finish in the top half of the league. But there's also a good chunk of them that they probably shouldn't be finishing there. On budget and kind of playing squad most years, but yeah. So, in case anyone's got lost, I went off on that tangent. Like, how have things gone? Team selections, youngsters, patience with the coach, basically.
Well, I think I was quite positive and optimistic on the preseason pod because even though last year was terrible, we did finish all right, and we made quite a few changes to the squad, which could go either way. And also because although we kept the manager, there was a freshening up of the coaching staff. And for example, Kiyokazu Kudo, who was the manager of Gunma last year, he came in as head coach, working with, you know, between Yanagishita and the players in that kind of role. And I think that is why we have seen a bit more tactical flexibility, not just in the, you know, the pre-game tactics, but in-game tactics as well, substitutions or you know, tactical switches, which last year we didn't see so much. I don't know what happened last year, but yeah, there was a real reluctance to change the team, even though things were going badly, and there was a real rigidity that ended up being a hindrance rather than a help. And we talked about that. I complained about that at length on the pod last year, so I'll move on from that so we don't bore people again. But this year, yeah, it's gone back to what Yanagishita is quite well known for, I think, which is using the youngsters a lot, giving them a chance. Nagamine is someone who joined on a special contract last year. And he did play a few games in the second half of the year, and he was pretty good. And this year, he came in, I think, maybe Shunya Mori was the starting left back. He might have had a little injury or something or needed a rest. Nagamine came in, and his crossing has been amazing. So many goals that we've scored have come because of his crossing, which is great. And, the Matsumotos have been doing well. And we even saw Rikito Sugiura for a substitute appearance a month or so ago, which was nice because we didn't see him at all last year. And yeah, I think it's the change in the coaching staff has kind of perhaps helped the manager to, maybe go back to what he was doing a couple of years ago, or, you know, be a bit bolder or kind of refresh his thinking or something like that. And in terms of having him for so long, I like it. I think it is refreshing. I like the fact that we're a little bit different in that we do have patience with the manager. I think the club could have got rid of him at some point last year or after the season, because last year was bad. But I kind of like that they've stuck with him, and hopefully it will work out for the better for both parties, and we can move onwards and upwards, because the club's aim is always to finish in their highest ever position, which for us would be 10th. And once you're that high, then, you know, there's always an outside chance of sneaking into the playoffs. And the club's overall stated aim is to be a J1 club, which, I mean, they haven't put a time limit on it, I don't think. But, I don't think that will happen anytime soon. But I like the way we use youth and the kind of incremental improvements that we're looking for. And the fact that, yeah, we're an outlier in that we have patience with the manager, which, yeah, you don't see much, even in Japan, which is, like you said, it's more patient than the European leagues. But it's nice. I'm quite pleased with how things are going so far this year. But then I was quite pleased early last season, and we all know how that turned out. So we'll see.
Fingers, toes, and everything else crossed.
Yeah. Okay. Right. Well, let's move on to the second game that you chose, which was league leaders Yokohama FC. They beat Vegalta Sendai 2-1. Sendai took the lead with Ryoma Kida scoring in the 18th minute, when Motohiko Nakajima won the ball in his own half and dribbled upfield, laid it off for Kida to shoot from the edge of the area. But Koki Ogawa continued his fine scoring form with two goals in quick succession in the 52nd and the 56th minute. The first one was really good. A long ball from the centre back. Ogawa got behind his marker and hit it first time with his left foot. A really good goal. The second one, there was a cross from Yuya Takagi, and Ogawa was alone in the middle of the area and jumped to head it in easily. So Yokohama FC won that 2-1. They're still unbeaten. Top of the league. Ogawa's got 10 goals already. What did you think about this one then, Johnny?
Yeah, again, I only caught the highlights of this one, but it seemed to be like all Sendai early on. And I really like the look of Nakajima. I know he was on loan at Niigata back in 2020. Then he went back to Cerezo last year. I think he scored in the Osaka Derby. But he kind of reminds me of, like, this is maybe an old name, but David Nugent, who was always very good in the championship, but not quite ready to cut it at the top level. I think he will be a very good player for them going forward. But then, yeah, Koki Ogawa's got so much confidence, doesn't he? Like, shooting from anywhere. I think he does get a bit of help from Stojicic, the goalkeeper for the equaliser. It'd be good if Stewart was on here, but I know it was a quick counter, like a very quick ball, and I think Sendai were caught out quite easily, but the reverse angle, it kind of shows he's got a good look at it, and there was an awful lot of goal for Ogawa to aim at. So I think he got his angle slightly wrong there. And then, as you said, it was a very nice cross from Takagi for the second goal. And I just thought I'd point out that, because we mentioned Motoki Hasegawa and the Vanfore Kofu game, Yuya Takagi went to the same university as him. They both actually played when Hosei University knocked out Gamba Osaka from the 2019 Emperor's Cup. So that, if you ever see any players coming to your club from Hosei University, I think they're maybe ones to keep an eye on. But yeah, we were kind of mentioning in the green room, weren't we, that's Yokohama FC. They're 8 points clear of second place Matsushita with only 10 games gone. Yeah. And I know this sounds really harsh with 32 games still remaining, but if they don't get automatic promotion after this start, it has to be seen as a bit of a failure, which I think the only things I can really see stopping them are that kind of pressure. Like we mentioned again with Niigata last season, started 13 games unbeaten. Then teams just started to defend deep against them. They couldn't get through. I think Yokohama FC, they do have a bit of money behind them. Like, Tatsuya Hasegawa is not a J2 player. Neither is Kohei Tezuka or Sven Brodersen. Realistically, neither is Ogawa either. And they probably do have the finance to keep these kind of players, considering if in the summer, if it looks like Yokohama FC are going up, there'll be a J1 club next year anyway. There's something I want to actually come back to you about with Koki Ogawa, but I'll maybe kind of quickly go on to my thoughts on Sendai. I'm always kind of surprised they're so high up the league, because whenever I've seen them, they've been quite poor. They're fifth now. I could see them finishing in the playoffs, but I think it'll be more a kind of case of other teams tripping each other up more than them actually being particularly good. I think there are 11, 12, 13 pretty good players at Sendai. good enough for automatic promotion, but there are too many of them are clustered in the same position, especially down the wide midfield, and now they've got Nakajima in their central midfield. And I think up front, like, for some reason, they're not playing Cardozo, who again, I asked the same question last year in J1 pod, why is he not playing? And I think too many of their strikers are too similar, like they don't really play well together. And I'll repeat John again, like, if you've got Masashi Wakasa starting regularly at centre-back, and also with the goalkeeping issues, I think, yeah, it's easy to see why there's so many goals, especially goals against in Sendai games. But yeah, I mean that said, they are a big enough club and there are players there. I think they'll pick up enough wins. I really like Massé, the right back. I think he's a good J1 level player as well. But kind of circling back to Yokohama FC, I haven't seen any signs of a Kokiometer at the Mitsuzawa, but I am kind of wondering how many goals he can score. Could he? I don't remember seeing anyone scoring 30 goals in J2. I don't know if it's happened, because I kind of feel like, in a way, his struggles at Jubilo help Yokohama FC, because he's got the bit between his teeth to prove people wrong. But if I was to name a few kind of J1 clubs, Hiroshima, Sapporo, Fukuoka, Nagoya, Gamba, what they've all got in common is they'll be looking exactly for a Kokio Ogawa-type player this summer.
Yeah.
But again, like I said, he may well think, well, I don't want to go and sit in someone else's bench. I'll stay here. I'm in the team. I'm liked. I'm doing well. And I'll go up and I'll bang in double digits in J1 next season. Then a really big team like an Urawa, Kashiwa, Marinos, Kawasaki come calling, that might be his plan. So yeah, I mean, again, your thoughts in the game, but also kind of specifically maybe like Ogawa, will he stay? How many goals can he score? What do you think about him?
Well, it's been an amazing start for him, isn't it? 10 goals from 10 games is fantastic. And it's always hard trying to, you know, second guess players' thoughts, because you often see players will, someone in Ogawa's situation is doing really well and going to win the league, but they will make that move to a, you know, mid-table J1 side, and you think, why on earth have they done that? They could stay and score more and get the adulation and go up as champions or whatever. But you never really know what the person's motivations are. But I think it would be great if he could stay and just keep banging it in, get 42 goals. Why not? He's on pace for it, and yeah, I think that would be good. But I can definitely see there are probably a lot of J1 clubs who are already looking sort of enviously at Yokohama FC and seeing what can we do to get him to come to us. And in terms of the game generally, I only watch the highlights of this, but it looked to me like if Sendai had better finishing in the first half an hour, they could have killed the game off. Mm-hmm. They had a few good chances, it seemed to me, but the finishing was not very good, which actually seems a bit unusual for them, because they are a quite high scoring team this year, but their defense is pretty bad, isn't it? I think John and Daniel talked about this last week. Their defense is pretty shambolic at times. I can't really get much of a handle on them, because we talked in the green room that Sendai, they spent the last few years kind of clinging on in J1. Mm-hmm. And I know that there have been issues. The fans and supporters have been unhappy with the way the club has been run. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they had a strange squad where they didn't really have any youth products or prospects coming into the first team or anything, and ended up with a load of sort of middle-aged or mid-career, not journeyman, but you know what I mean, that kind of player who never really made it anywhere else. And so I don't know. Yeah, I can't see them going up automatically, but I mean, they could finish in the playoffs, because they, if their attack keeps going the way it is going generally, then they'll probably win more than they lose, but they need to sort out their defense, because that seems to be their main problem at the moment. So yeah, I don't know what to make of Sendai. But yeah, come back in another 10 games. I probably still won't know.
They have the worst defence in the top half. And I think the one thing I forgot to say earlier, because the four teams that came down, Yokohama FC, Sendai, Oita and Tokushima, they're currently second best. I think, and again, we talked about this in the green room, I think Oita over time, once they had the COVID at the start of the season and that they're still in the Levan Cup, I think once they get that out of the way, that there's plenty of good J2 level players at Oita. I would be quite confident in Oita finishing above Sendai. What about you?
Yeah, I think so. I think Oita are making good progress up the table. Well, they've won four of the last five. Since they got thrashed by Nagasaki, actually, they've been pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And that was mid-March, I think. So, yeah, I think Oita are doing pretty well. They're steadily going upwards. And Sendai, yeah, like I said, they might hang on in the playoffs, but, yeah, I don't think they'll finish above Oita. But we shall see. Okay, let's move on to the third game. This was Fagiano Okayama against Albirex Niigata. This one finished 1-1. Kaito Taniguchi gave Niigata the lead in the 12th minute after a few step overs and a nice cross from Shion Honma found him at the back post to head in. That's three goals in the last three games for Taniguchi, three consecutive games. And then Mitchell Duke got the equaliser for Okayama in the 29th minute. There was a long pass from Yuri Boyce. And Duke, this was an interesting one because he was kind of pirouetting and he was standing between two defenders. He managed to head it straight up in the air, get away from the defenders. Then he had to adjust his body position quite awkwardly to shoot and score. It was quite an interesting goal. So it finished 1-1. What are your thoughts on this one then, Johnny?
Yeah, this seemed like, again, I only caught the highlights, but it seemed like quite a decent game. Like you said, Taniguchi, three goals in three games. When I was mentioning Ogawa in the previous game, because last season I did a kind of, it was quite a popular article, it's Scouting J2. Sean Carroll rightly pointed out I picked like a 26 or 27-year-old Yoshiki Fujimoto as my centre forward. This year, there's no problem finding options. You've got like Ogawa or I think Ryoga Sato at Verdi, maybe even Toshiki Takahashi at Kumamoto. I think Taniguchi, I think, is someone that, while it's good for Niigata fans that he's doing well now, I think he's going to be very much on J1 clubs' radars this summer, especially those ones I mentioned earlier. And then kind of talking of forwards, it seemed like after that was the Mitch Duke show. There was a lovely kind of Akito Fukumori-esque pass from Boyce out to set up Duke for, like you said, that brilliant athletic finish. And then the rest of the highlights just seemed to be Duke being denied. It did seem like Okayama kind of took over after that early Niigata goal. And I guess it's a good point for Niigata on the road, but Okayama might be a touch disappointed. I did want to talk about Okayama because obviously they've brought in Takashi Kiyama, who came in at Gamba in a kind of vaguely titled role at the end of last season. But he really impressed the kind of Gamba supporters because our defence was a complete shambles at times, as many people will know from last season. And he very quickly, like even with, I think, Miura Shoji and Kim Young-won out injured, we had our backup centre-backs we kept a clean sheet at Marinos and we held Urawa to a penalty. He didn't have much to work with, but in a quick space of time, he very quickly got the defence organised. And it was a big, big difference to what had been there before. So I think he clearly caught the eye of, I'd imagine, a number of J2 clubs with what he did there. I think they have as a club, they've replaced the two centre-backs who left pretty well. That Boyce and Unagi are good. And then obviously, Uejo and Ishige were big players for them, Ishige in the second half of last season. And I think they haven't directly replaced them, but I think they have a deeper squad, if that makes sense. There's more players who can come in and contribute. I mentioned earlier, I think Kiyama came in from Gamba. He also brought in Thiago Alves and Haruto Shirai, who had a bad injury, but is very quick and scored a goal the other week. So I kind of think Okayama and Niigata, I can definitely see them both in the top 10 where they are now. Make the playoffs it's a toss of a coin, I think, because I think Niigata might be the more likely, but you know the new manager, Rikizo Matsuhashi, he replaced Albert Pruji. Again, we're kind of talking about this in the green room. I think Yeah, you know, you say like players have strengths and weaknesses, managers have strengths and weaknesses too. And I think as Pudgy is showing at FC Tokyo, I think he is a very good manager. But results in the field at Niigata weren't great. So I wonder almost that style is better suited, with the greatest of respect to Niigata, who do have some very good players, but it's going to find a more receptive audience the higher up the chain you go. And again, we mentioned someone who's probably quite close to your heart in some ways, Roy Hodgson. Like, if I was to boil down a 50-year coaching career to a very simple couple of sentences, he did very well, obviously, at like Palace and West Brom, Fulham, Switzerland back in the 90s, places where he wasn't really dealing with massive egos or he wasn't dealing with huge expectations, whereas places like Liverpool and obviously the England job, it's the opposite. He didn't do well. So he's by no means a bad manager. He just needs the right kind of situation to work with. The same with Otsuki at Gunma. You would look at him getting Urawa to 14th and think, oh, he must be terrible. But put him in at Gunma, he's in the right kind of environment to do his thing. And he actually shows he's a good manager. So, yeah, I think Pudgy might be quite a big character off the field to replace, even if the results weren't great. And like, because last season, you know, we mentioned at the start Yokohama FC have made. Niigata were unbeaten the first 13 games, 33 points and 31 goals in those games. Remaining 29, they only had 35 points and 30 goals. So they really fell away badly. I think there is a code that can be cracked to get that very talented group of players into the top two. I'm just not convinced it's going to happen. And yeah, I mean, Niigata, it tends to get overlooked. They are a pretty, pretty big club at this level. So the fans do have a right, like six last season, six again. They do have a right to kind of push on. But yeah, I wanted to know what you think, James. I've got them down as top 10, but not guaranteed top six. And Niigata being the more likely of the two to make the playoffs. So what do you think about those kind of opinions?
Yeah, Okayama, I think they're one of those teams that kind of every year they flatter to deceive. And you think, oh, it's going to be their year. They're going to push on and at least make the playoffs. But they you know, they don't. And last year, their defence wasn't their problem. They didn't score enough goals. Mm-hmm. And this year, their defence is still very good. And like you mentioned, the centre-backs, Boyce and Yanagi, is an amazing centre-back pairing. Mm. And they'll have no problems at the back. But up front, I think, yeah, Duke is now in his second season with them. So he'll have settled in properly. And with Thiago Alves as well, seems to be contributing off the bench mostly. And Stefan Mork as well seems to be doing all right and settling in quite nicely. And I think they'll definitely, well, I say definitely, I would not be surprised if they finished in the top 10. In terms of Niigata, yeah, their squad didn't change much. And it seems like their style hasn't changed that much from last year either. Mm-hmm. And that means that, and I think I've talked about this on the pod before, but it means that they're still having the same problems that they had last year, which was that they often can't find a way through. So you got they're dominating games, or at least when I've seen them, they particularly dominated the last half an hour, but they haven't been able to find a way through. And a few times they have, but it's come right at the end. But they've been frustrated, and I think you're right that they are quite a big club at this level, and they've been down for a while now. Mm-hmm. And I think, yeah, they should be by now pushing on. And I think they really need to do it this year, because I know for the last 3 years, I think we've been saying, oh, Sean Homer won't be there next year. But I mean, how long is he going to be there for? He's very talented. Surely he's going to move on eventually. Kaito Taniguchi is proving he's not just a one-season wonder at this level. And then the likes of Shunsuke Mito as well as a youngster. He's in his second year as well now. He's doing pretty well. And they've got a lot of talent. And I think if they don't make the most of it, then they're going to lose it. And, yeah, it seems like they haven't quite found the... Like you said, they haven't cracked the code for making this very talented group perform or get consistent results. They had it for a bit at the start of last year. They're not doing badly this year at all. They're sixth. They're unbeaten in three at the moment. they're scoring goals, they're winning games, but they're not perhaps not winning enough. But it's still early. Okayama as well, they're ninth and they're unbeaten in three as well. They're doing quite nicely. So I think, I wouldn't be surprised if Niigata finished above Okayama, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they finished the other way around, because I think they're going to be quite close in the table throughout the season. It's going to be intriguing to see how, if either of them can kick on, or if they continue at this kind of steady pace, or if they fall away. Perhaps if they do fall away, it won't be as dramatic as it was last year for Niigata after that amazing start, but I think it would still be disappointing for both teams.
I think there's Yokohama FC look a cut above, but I think there's a big chunk of teams in the middle that there's not an awful lot of difference, and I think a couple of injuries or even a decent loan signing off a J1 team in the summer could make a big difference, because Niigata are only they're only 3 points above Kumamoto in 12th. So you're only a couple of bad results away from being mid-table now. So I think there's probably not going to be a whole lot of difference between, say, 7th and 16th come the end of the season.
Yeah.
So I hope clubs do take that into account when they're kind of reviewing managerial positions at the end of the year. I don't hold my breath that it'll happen, but I hope that does happen.
Yeah. Okay, we got one more game to talk about. It's Machida Zelvia and Montedio Yamagata. This one also finished 1-1, and the goals came from two of the more exciting and well-known young players in the league. I don't know if they're young. They're young compared to me, anyway. players in the league. Taiki Hinato gave Machida the lead after 26 minutes. A short corner routine and a blocked ball fell for him to score from about 8 yards or so. And then Kota Yamada got a very impressive sort of individual equaliser in the 80th minute. He dribbled from inside his own half. He rode one challenge and dodged another and shot from the edge of the area. And Machida thought that they were going to win it in stoppage time, but there was a Yamagata defender on the line to head the ball clear. And it finished 1-1. What did you make of this one then?
Well, I used the American phrase, the face of the franchise. So Taiki Hirato is the face of Machida, and Kota Yamada is the face of Yamagata. And I think that this game highlighted both of their talents. It also highlighted the two sides of the coin at Montedio Yamagata. The defending before Hirato's goal, I think, was quite lax. You don't give someone like him two bites at the cherry. And then what a run by Yamada for that goal, the brilliant attacking. And I was at Panasonic Stadium yesterday watching Gamba against Shonan. Neither of those teams had better attackers than Yamada. I think it's a big coup for them to get him a permanent deal from Marinos. I think the only reason he's there is Peter Klimovsky. And I think, also that's going forward. But we're on the Gamba theme, a former Gamba defender, Hiroki Noda, headed off the line and additional time at the end of the game to save a point. I think of the two 1-1s, this one seemed less interesting than Okayama and Niigata. Potentially two good teams with maybe contrasting styles cancelling each other out. I tend to agree with kind of previous analysis on here that even though Machida are second now, I think it might be tough for them to get automatic promotion. But they really need to be looking for the top six this year. It's Popovic's third year in charge. We know what we're going to get. It's going to be the same 11 basically for most of the year, barring injuries. I think Vinicius Araujo is the big X factor, because previously you've had it matches out 5 goals here, 6 goals here, 7 goals there. If Araujo can come in and get 12, 13 goals and the others play around him, you've got Hirato's got 5 goals and 4 assists in 10 games already. If you put Araujo scoring regularly on top of that, they will have a chance of the top two. Just a couple of other points I wanted to make was, I think it's been pointed out that centre-backs is a bit of a weak point. And I know Shunya Suganuma joined just before the season started, and he's not been seen yet. I wonder if it's a fitness issue, because now he's 4 or 5 months without a game. Are they going to go with the current centre-backs, or will he come in? And also, they brought in Hijiri Onaga from Omiya. And I know, obviously, you'll talk about later, Omiya had a very good result. But it's going to be talked about that them not really having the resources, but Onaga is playing left back for the second best team in the league. what left back is a weak point at Omiya. A bit like Yamakoshi's getting a game for third place Verdi at right back. Right back's a position for position of weakness for Omiya. They didn't really use these players very much. Like, what was going on there? But Omiya had a very good result this week, so I don't want to step on anyone's toes. But if I went on to finally Yamagata, I think we mentioned earlier they're another kind of sleeper team, maybe a bit like Nagasaki. Sorry, they're another sleeper team, a bit like Nagasaki or Kofu or maybe even Jeff. I think they will. The game with Okayama hasn't been scrubbed yet. They're down in 19th. They could jump up a bit. I think a bit like Niigata, Yamagata's size is sometimes not really played up enough. Because I was looking through my Meikan, and they had a 3-year spell in J1 2009 to 2011. They were also up for a season 2015. And since 2009, they've only been in the bottom half of J2 once. So this really is a club that needs to be aiming for top 6, top 8 every year. I think the attack is going to be the key. Again, when Klimovsky was at Marinos with Ange Postecoglou, and clearly they're good managers and they had a good core of Japanese players, but I think what really made the difference was the working of the foreign market, specifically Brazilians. You think like Marcos Jr. or Eric, Thiago Martins, Edgar Jr., those kind of players. So I'm very, very interested to see the impact, like Thiago Alves, and again, I think he scored 2 goals last week, De La Torre. How do they link up with, if they come in and are really good, like top level, like J2, like foreign players, and combine with like Yamada, you've got Yoshiki Fujimoto, who's been playing in the right wing, he's got 5 goals, Taiki Kato. It can kind of cover up a slightly shaky defence, and they could be a very exciting team to watch. And also they could be a team that has a really strong run like they did last year. So, they're way down at the moment, but they're only 6 points off Niigata. And again, if they win that scrubbed game with Okayama, that would put them only 3 points off the playoffs. So it doesn't look great when you look at the kind of formative table, but it's not terrible either. So, I mean, those are my thoughts. Well, what do you think about that, James?
Yeah, I think it's true. I think, I guess you could say Yamagata in a bit of a false position, because they've been playing pretty well, but they're not winning. That's the problem. They're at least their last 5 games, they've only won 1. Two losses and 2 draws. They've only won 2 games this season. They're scoring goals, although 5 of them were in 1 match against the 10 men of Akita. But we know that their attack's not the problem. And so, I guess I don't know. I never claim to be an expert. I'll just reiterate that. But you're right. They are a big club. Perhaps, a lot of people don't realise that. But they are perhaps one of the bigger clubs at this level, and they shouldn't be down in 19th. And they started slowly last year as well, and it was a manager change that gave them the impetus to move up the table. But I'm not suggesting that they need to change the manager, but things need to click. Mm-hmm. And I think integrating those the Brazilians and if some other, if they get other new loan signings or new signings of any kind, integrating them will be important, and they need to do it quickly, because the longer they sort of languish down in the lower reaches of the table, the less chance they have of being able to catch up with 6th place. And I think first place is probably already gone, because the way Yokohama FC have started and the way Yamagata have started. But it's only 10 games. We're only 10 games in, and they're not that far off 6th. But they need to kind of not get their act together, but they need to start winning. They've drawn 4 and lost 4. They've only won 2, so it's not enough, is it? But and in terms of Machida again, probably they won't be 2nd at the end of the year, but I think they're again, like you said, they're definitely a team that should be looking for a top 6 finish, because of they've been progressing nicely under Popovic over the last couple of years. And I don't know if this is just me, but I tend to think of things in like 3-year cycles for managers. Mm-hmm. with, you know, they take over and they've got to, you know, redo things and get the team they want, and then they've got to refine that over the second year, and the third year is when things should really be running really nicely. Mm-hmm. And Popovic's third year, this should be the year that Machida really kick on. And they're going all right. I mean, they've got 15 goals already, and they've only conceded 7. So looks like they're doing quite well so far. They've got to keep it up.
That was the thing that actually surprised me. I was looking at the league table there, because only draw specialists Tokushima have conceded less than Machida. And the kind of general analysis, which I'm also guilty of, is that they've got a bit of a dodgy keeper and the centre-backs aren't that great, but it doesn't seem to be holding them back at the moment, does it?
No, they're doing pretty well, although they're a little bit of a wobble at the moment because they're winless in their last three. But I mean that's not a big problem yet. So yeah, it'll be again in. I like to see how they can kick on from here, and if perhaps they can catch up with Yokohama FC if they have a bit of a wobble, which surely they will eventually. Mm-hmm. Or if Machida get kind of sucked down into the group of teams that's chasing them, because they're all pretty bunched up at the moment. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. Good. I think that'll do for part one. Don't go anywhere. After a quick break, I'm going to round up the rest of the match day 10 action.
Let's take a look at the rest of the Matchday 10 games, starting with a great result for Omiya Ardija, who finally got their first win of the season at the expense of Jeff United. Atsushi Kawata pounced on a mistake by Jeff captain Daisuke Suzuki to put Omiya ahead in the 9th minute. Taishi Taguchi forced a good save from Omiya goalie Yuta Minami with a free kick just before half-time. Midway through the second half, Kawata struck again. Jeff gave the ball away in midfield. Kawata took control just inside the opposition half and surged forward, holding off one defender and nutmegging another before shooting across Shota Arai in goal. 2-0 to Omiya with 22 minutes left. But it wouldn't be Omiya if they didn't stress their supporters out a bit. And when Ikki Arai rose highest to head in a Taguchi corner in the 87th minute, things got a bit nervy. They got nervier still when 6 minutes of additional time were announced and Saldanha hit the side netting, but Omiya held on for the win. That result, along with Gunma's win down in Okinawa, means that FC Ryukyu are now bottom of J2. Yuzo Iwakami scored the only goal of the game in the 8th minute, as Ryukyu only half cleared across from the left, and Iwakami hit a screamer with his left foot from about 20 yards. Keita Tanaka almost equalised after half an hour, but his cross-slash-shot was cleared off the line by a covering defender. Junto Taguchi made a series of good saves early in the second half to keep it at 1-0, but he didn't get much support from his attack. Yuki Kusano headed Yuku's best chance wide, and Masatoshi Kushibiki in the Gunma goal continued his good form with a fine save in stoppage time to preserve the clean sheet. Gunma are now in fourth with 3 consecutive wins, while Yuku's only win came on match day 4. The other top 6 team we haven't really mentioned yet is third place Tokyo Verdy. They lost for the second game in a row to a Renofa Yamaguchi team that's going on quite nicely in 8th. Yamaguchi went ahead in the 41st minute when a headed clearance fell invitingly for Wataru Tanaka to volley in from the edge of the area. Verdy almost drew level in first half stoppage time when Seiya Baba hit the bar with a header. The equaliser did come in the 62nd minute, a break down the left. A cross from Corky Morita found Byron Vasquez at the back post, and he took his time before passing calmly to Ryoga Sato to turn it in. Parity didn't last long though. 5 minutes later, a free kick wasn't cleared properly, and Hiroto Ishikawa smashed it in from just inside the area. 5 minutes after that, Yamaguchi had a penalty after a clumsy tackle by Kohei Yamakoshi brought down Daisuke Takagi, who then converted the penalty, and it finished 3-1 to Yamaguchi. Just above Yamaguchi in 7th are Oita Trinita, who made the long journey up north to take on Iwate Gruja Morioka. It was worth the trip, as goals from Naoki Nomura in the first half and Hokuto Shimoda in the second half gave Oita a 2-0 lead. Nomura's goal was well taken, as the ball came to him 18 yards out, and he dummied a shot, stepped around a sliding defender before actually shooting. He almost had a similar goal just a few minutes later, but shot wide. Shimoda's goal was a free kick from 25 yards out, curled perfectly into the top corner. Yuki Shikama pulled one back for the hosts in the 71st minute, stretching to flicking a cross that had gone behind him, but there were no further goals, although Shikama hit the bar with a free kick, and it finished Iwate 1, Oita 2. Viva and Nagasaki continued their rise up the table with a 1-0 win away to Blaublitz Akita. Hijiri Kato's 30-yard rocket was the difference, a shot that was still rising when it hit the net. Akita keeper Yudai Tanaka had no chance. Ken Tokura wanted a penalty just after the hour when a defender pulling his shirt prevented him from getting much power into his shot, but the referee didn't agree. Kaio Cesar had a shot deflected just wide. Akita's best chance came in the 80th minute as a shot from 20 yards smacked the crossbar. I think it was Yuji Wakasa, and he hit it so hard that it rebounded back out to where he was standing. There was a stoppage time scramble, but Akita couldn't force the ball over the line, and Nagasaki took the points. Tochigi welcomed Raso Kumamoto for a game that finished 1-1, with both goals coming in the opening 3 minutes. Hayato Kurosaki put Tochigi in front in the second minute, heading in a corner untroubled, but Yuhi Takemoto equalised almost immediately, also with a header, but this one from across from the right. Koki Sakamoto hit the bar for Kumamoto midway through the first half, and Yuya Sato had a few easy saves to make in the Kumamoto goal, and one good reaction save in the second half, but it was not much of note in the DAZN highlights package for this one. And finally, Tokushima Vortis did what they do best. They drew, this time 1-1 away to Mito, in a game with late drama. There was a red card in the first half too, for Mito midfielder Kenshin Takagishi for a challenge that left Shunto Kodama in a heap. It was studs up on the side of Kodama's calf shin area. It looked pretty painful. Tokushima gradually ramped up the intensity, and Mito goalie Lui Yamaguchi had to save well from a close range header in the 83rd minute. The extra man paid off in the 89th minute. Eiji Shirai had time and space to cross from the right, and Shota Fujio angled his header into the bottom corner. But Mito weren't down and out. In the 94th minute, keeper Yamaguchi launched a long ball forward. It was headed down, and Kodai Dohi looped a shot into the top right corner. A great effort from the 10 men of Mito, an 8th draw for Tokushima. That's the other matches taken care of. I'll be back in a sec to preview match day 11 with Johnny.
Welcome back, everyone. Johnny's come back and he's going to help me preview match day 11. And these fixtures are spread out nicely across 4 days, which gives us all a chance to watch as much J2 as we possibly can. We've got two games on Wednesday the 20th, 7 o'clock in the evening. There's Tokushima against Iwate and Oita against Kanazawa. I think those have been moved forward because there are Lavan Cup matches at the weekend. Personally, I think it should be the other way around, but that's another issue for another pod. And on Friday night, also at 7 o'clock, we've got Kumamoto against Okayama. Johnny, are there any of those that look interesting to you? Please say yes.
Well, honestly, the Oita Kanazawa one looks the most interesting to me, but I'll let you talk more about that. I would just say that, as we said earlier, I think Oita are a team on the up. Mm. You would think they're basically out of the Lavan Cup. I don't think they were really, if you're a J1, an established J1 team like Kashima, I think the Lavan Cup's good for developing your squad and young players and getting players back from injury. If you're a J2 team that has to play 42 games, I think it's just a headache, isn't it? So I think they'll play their full team against Kanazawa, and then they'll just rest up in the Lavan Cup. So I think that's going to be a tough game for your boys. Tokushima again, 8 draws out of 10 games. With the greatest respect to Iwate, Gruja, Morioka, they have to win that game. Whether it's an ugly 1-0, they simply have to win that if they get any aspirations of finishing near the top this season. I think Kumamoto or Okayama, this could actually be quite a decent game. It might go for a draw. Just on the subject of, because both Morioka and Kumamoto have been promoted this season, I've not heard it mentioned on the pod this year. Because of all the kind of ups and downs with the league due to COVID, both those teams only played 28 games in the J3 last season. They're going to have to play 42 this year, so essentially like an extra third of a season tagged on. They do have big squads, but whether they have deep enough squads, I'm not sure. So this it could be absolutely nothing, but I think for Kumamoto, they've started well. But I think banking as many points as possible early will definitely help them, even more so than in a normal year. But how about you, James? Those three games, I guess specifically also the Kanazawa Oita, are you expecting much from that?
That's an interesting point about the number of fixtures and squad size. I hadn't thought of that, but yeah, they're going to have to deal with an extra chunk of games. And actually, the next couple of weeks are going to test every team's squad's depth, because there are quite a lot of games as we come towards Golden Week. So yeah, I think that's an interesting point, and that's something to keep an eye on over the next month or so. Oita Kanazawa, yeah, Oita are going well, aren't they? We talked about them a little bit earlier, and but Kanazawa haven't lost away yet, doing pretty well away from home, to the extent that I have heard people start calling us Oegen instead of Zergen, which is pretty funny actually. So I think I think this will be difficult, especially having the short turnaround between games. I mean, we had Saturday fixture and now Wednesday fixture, but it means we got a week until the following fixture. Yeah, I expect that to be very difficult. And it's a long trip as well. Well, everyone's a long trip for Kanazawa, actually. We don't have any near neighbours there. So yeah, that one, I'll be watching that one, hoping we continue our good away form. Yeah, Tokushima, they've drawn 8 games. Can they make it 9? I hope they can. I think they should keep that going as long as possible. All right, let's talk about Saturday fixture then. There are 7 games on Saturday. At 2 o'clock, there are 5 matches. We've got Sendai against Ryukyu. That's a long trip for Ryukyu. Yamagata against Omiya. Tokyo Verde against Jeff. And Kofu against Machida. And Niigata against Nagasaki. And then 2 games at 4 o'clock, Mito Yamaguchi and Tochigi against Yokohama FC. Anything stand out for you there?
There's a lot of good games on Saturday. I think it's definitely the place to be. My first choice, I think, would be Niigata at home to Nagasaki, 6th versus 10th. But if Nagasaki win, they would go above Niigata. Again, if Niigata win, it's a statement win that they could do with. As we mentioned earlier, I think both of these teams should really be targeting top 2. I think it is open to them, or at least top 6. So it is a big game for both. I also put down Kofu against Machida. As we mentioned again earlier, I think Kofu are better than their performances suggest. Machida, again, if they are going to challenge for that top 2, this is a game they should be targeting to win, but it is very, very tough. And I think this might be quite a low-scoring game with both teams kind of cancelling each other out. It is a bit of a difficult run for Machida, because you mentioned they haven't won in the last 3, but they've drawn at home to a very tough Jeff. They lost away to Nagasaki, and they've just drawn at home with Yamagata, and now they're playing Kofu. So these teams are not that high up in the league, but I think they've got a lot of good players. The other game, the main game I picked out was obviously Tokyo Verde hosting Jeff, a derby of sorts, I suppose. And you've maybe got slight overperformers against slight underperformers. And I think it's worth pointing out that Jeff won this fixture 5-1 last season. So I think Verde might fancy their chances a bit of revenge this year. Mm. And just finally, a quick comment. Tochigi at home to Yokohama FC. It looks like it should be a comfortable win for Yokohama FC, but if I've learned one thing in watching J-League, don't put results down as being comfortable, because you never know what's just around the corner. So yeah, I know I've stolen 4 of the games, but any comments on those or any other games you think we should watch out for?
I'm quite interested in Sendai Ryukyu, because as we talked about earlier, Sendai's attack is pretty good, their defense is not so good. Ryukyu's attack is pretty good and their defense is not so good. So put that down for 0-0. And also Yamagata against Omiya. The Omiya will be on a high after finally winning. Congratulations again, Omiya supporters. And Yamagata, they're not getting the results. Again, we talked about them a little bit earlier, and they're only just above Omiya in the table now. So Omiya might be... Well, Omiya, they've got to start putting wins together. They've got a win. They need to make it 2 wins and then 3 wins. So they've got to be on their game. So I think this one could be interesting. And if Yamagata lose, then again they'll start to panic, because they they'll be still down there and they could get dragged into things that they don't want to be dragged into. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think and the games you picked out, they look like they're going to be pretty good. I think that there's a lot of interesting stuff on Saturday. And there's one game on Sunday as well at 5 o'clock, Gunma against Akita. And this one's on the J League's international YouTube channel. So people outside Japan will be able to watch this one. Got any thoughts on that one?
Well, I think I mentioned to you, I'm getting my third Corona vaccine on Saturday. So I may very well be tuning into this one because I don't have any other plans. But I am actually quite looking forward to seeing Gunma under Otsuki because I've noticed, like, last year or the last couple of years, you might have got the odd spectacular Genki Omae goal, but they've been scoring quite a few good team goals, like a lot of passing from side to side with a nice finish. Yeah. And I've also heard whispers in the sort of last year or so about the winger Taiki Amagasa, who's finally getting out a run in the team. He seems to be quite highly rated, so I'm looking forward to seeing him. But, you know, as I mentioned to you just before we came back on here, if, and it's a big if, Gunma can win, that would put them into 20 points from 11 games. And considering they only took 41 points from 42 games last year, that would be a pretty amazing start for them. So, yeah Akita win then, I think. But what about you, James? How do you see that one going?
Yeah, it's an intriguing one, isn't it? Because, no one's expecting Gunma to be that high up the table at this stage or any stage of the season, I think. And Akita they're kind of steady mid-table team. What are they doing then? And they're 17th at the moment, but they've had a couple of losses in a row. They had that bad one against Yamagata, and then a kind of a narrow one against Nagasaki weekend just gone. But they're usually a decent defensive team, and pretty good from set pieces, I think, up front. So that's going to be, it's an unusual one to highlight, I think, for the YouTube broadcast. But actually, when you think about it, it's going to be an intriguing one to watch. And I think if anyone tunes in, they might be in for quite a good contest. And because also, I think, yeah, Gunma, they're a different prospect. They've been scoring good goals. And also, I've been impressed by Masatoshi Kushibiki in goal for them. He's been putting on some pretty spectacular performances. And one thing I've noticed from what I've seen of Akita is there are a lot of goal mouth scrambles. So he might be quite busy. And we'll see if he can continue his good form for another week. All right. Okay, that'll do. Thanks very much, Johnny, for your thoughts and analysis on all of this. It's been great having you on. Hope we can do it again sometime soon.
Thanks very much for having me on, James. I hope the listeners enjoyed our first partnership. I think it went reasonably well. And yeah, this is my first time on. It's April, so I'm sure we'll be back on at some point in the near future. So thanks again for having me.
Oh, it was a pleasure. And thanks to everyone who likes and retweets and downloads and listens. And thanks to our patrons who sponsor us with actual money. If you'd like to know more, go to patreon.com/jtalkpod. And of course, thank you for listening. Don't go anywhere though, because here comes Magic Mike Innes with JTalk Short Corner. JTalk
Extra Time. Hello everyone, and welcome to JTalk Short Corner, the mini pod that keeps you up to date with events in J3 of the J League. I'm your host, Mike Innes, and in this episode, I'll be looking back on fixtures in round 6 of the J3 season, previewing the rearranged game taking place in midweek, and J3 clubs' participation this weekend in local qualifying tournaments for the Emperor's Cup. First, some items of J3 news since the last pod. The J League have announced the winners of the player, coach and goal of the month awards for March. The first two reflect Fukushima United's fine start to the season, as Hiroki Higuchi takes the player prize following his switch to a central midfield role, and Toshihiro Hattori is named coach of the month, his very first month in charge of a J League club. The goal choice is Kazaki Nakagawa's beautiful chip over the keeper for FC Imabari against Katare Toyama in round two. Congratulations to all concerned. Azul Claro Numazu forward Hadi Fayad has been named in a preliminary squad of 31 ahead of Malaysia under-23's participation in the Southeast Asian Games football tournament to be held in Vietnam in May. Iwaki FC have dual registered from their under-18 side goalkeeper Takuho Misawa, who is listed as 165 centimetres tall. Young Ehime FC midfielder Shuya Iwai is out for the season after undergoing surgery on his right ACL, injured in training. And the postponed round four game between FC Gifu and Gainare Tottori has been rescheduled for Wednesday the 18th of May between round nine of the regular J3 season and the first round proper of the Emperor's Cup. Now on to the action, and round six began with two games on Saturday the 16th of April. Both turned out to be narrow wins for higher placed teams against lower opposition. Continuing their unbeaten start to the season, Kagoshima United squeezed past Gainare Tottori at the Shiranami Stadium. Could have been very different though, as Tottori began the better side and should have gone ahead in the 16th minute when Yuya Taguchi saw off the challenge of Kenta Hirose but somehow blasted over the bar from 6 yards out. And 2 minutes later, Kagoshima went in front. Hiroya Nodake in for the absent Frank Romero, sending over a low cross from the left that was touched on by Corky Arita. Gainare defender Naoya Uozato should have cleared the danger, but Junki Goryo stole in front of him to poke it past Ken Tajiri. The closest Kagoshima came to extending their lead was 12 minutes from time when rookie Masayoshi Endo exchanged passes with Taku Ushinohama and curled a shot just past the post. But otherwise, it was the visitors who had the better half chances. They couldn't take them though, and it finished Kagoshima 1, Tottori 0. Kagoshima played okay and won. Tottori played okay and lost the match, decided by one moment combining opportunism and lapsed concentration. Similarly, AC Nagano Parseiro just got the better of YSCC Yokohama in the Yuki Stauff derby at Mitsuzawa. The Nagano coach took back to Yokohama four players who played at YSCC in 2020, but his side struggled to overcome the hangover of last week's heavy defeat by Iwaki FC. Like Tottori at Kagoshima, YSCC missed a fantastic chance to go in front when 3 minutes before the break, and following a good team move, Takuya Fujiwara crossed for Atsushi Kikutani, who hooked his shot over from 6 yards. Parseiro were hardly at their best, but 15 minutes from time, Hayate Sugi crossed from the left, club debutant Hiroki Yamamoto twice had shots blocked, and before the home defence could get in a clearance, Carlos Duke pounced to steer it over the line. YSCC coach Kenji Nakada responded by throwing on 40-year-old Daisuke Matsui for his first appearance for the home side, but to no avail. It ended YSCC 0, Nagano 1. 5 straight losses now for YSCC, firmly rooted to the bottom of the table. Parseiro did just enough to take the points, but just enough is still enough. The other 7 games were on Sunday the 17th, when one team, like Kagoshima, maintained their unbeaten start to the season, but another lost for the first time. Leaders Fukushima United were at home to SC Sagamihana, who came into the match following consecutive defeats to fellow relegated sides Matsumoto and Ehime. Sagamihana coach Takuya Takagi made 4 changes to his starting lineup and was forced into another switch early on, captain and centre-back Hiroki Mizumoto going off injured in only the 11th minute. Fukushima had more of the play, but Sagami had missed a great chance to score in the 65th minute. Kazuaki Sasso screwing his shot wide from 6 yards when it appeared Takumu Fujinuma had put it on a plate for him. The home side continued to press forward, right back Kosuke Tanaka being a particular thorn in Sagami Hara's left-hand side with his overlapping runs and crosses. With 9 minutes left, it looked like Fukushima had made the breakthrough when Junya Takahashi glanced to Ryota Kitamura's lofted free kick goalwards, but Kentaro Kakoi hurled himself across goal to make the save. But in the 93rd minute, Takahashi scored, receiving Tanaka's pass into the area, sending it out to Makoto Kawanishi and side-footing the return ball beyond the reach of Kakoi. Final score, Fukushima 1, Sagami Hara 0. Toshihiro Hattori's team scrap out another win and keep another clean sheet to maintain their position at the top of the standings. 3 losses in a row now for Sagami Hara, slipping down the table. 6 games undefeated constitutes Fukushima's best ever start to a J3 season, but local rivals Iwaki FC suffered their first ever J3 loss as they took on FC Imabari at Iwaki Green Field. A shock result it may be, especially coming after Iwaki's trouncing of Nagano in round 5, but Imabari deserved the win against an out of sorts home side. The only goal of the game came 30 seconds into the second half. Good work by Marcus Indio, setting up Wataru Noguchi to cross from the right for Takatora Kondo, who got himself in front of a static Genki Egawa and finished well inside the far post. Imabari could and should have made it 2-0 with 14 minutes left when Kazaki Nakagawa beat Egawa to get on the end of a Kondo cross, only to head straight at keeper Kengo Tanaka. Final score, Iwaki 0, Imabari 1, and Iwaki's response to this result is going to be fascinating. Their next 2 league games are at home to Hachinohe, and then the first Fukushima derby in J3. Easily Imabari's best result so far, and quietly they're up to 6th in the table. And heading back up to 3rd are Matsumoto Yamaga, winners in front of the day's biggest crowd, 6,026 at FC Gifu. Yamaga carved open the home defence to take the lead in the 37th minute. Ren Komatsu left completely unmarked while standing right in front of Kazushige Kirihata's goal. Ayumu Yokoyama's ball from the right-hand side came through to Komatsu, who couldn't miss. Gifu pulled level in first half injury time. Daisuke Suzuki surging in front of Takayuki Mae to meet the cross from Ryo Kubota and score right-footed from 10 yards. The visitors went back in front 13 minutes into the second half. Kazuhiro Sato directing a corner 10 yards outside the penalty area to rookie Yusuke Kikui, who lashed in a first-time volley that struck the crowd of players and came to Sho Sumida, who finished from close range, his first ever pro goal. And his second was to follow in the 73rd minute, another Sato corner, this time struck low to the near post, bounced off Freire and was helped over the line by Sumida. Not the finest hour for the Gifu back line, and it could have been worse just moments later, a desperate save by Kirihata keeping out Komatsu's header from a cross by Ryo Toyama. At the other end, ex-Gifu keeper Victor parried a header by Kazuya Okamura after Ryohei Yoshihama's dangerous in-swinging corner exposed the Matsumoto defence, but that was as close as it came for the home side. Final score, Gifu 1, Matsumoto 3. Consistency notable by its absence for Gifu so far this season. Yamaga able to win the game because they were able to play on the front foot. J-Talk Extra Time. After dropping into the bottom four last week, Katale Toyama pulled off a vital win at Fujieda My FC, Katale coach Nobuhiro Ishizaki's previous club, from where he brought Yuya Himeno, Naoto Ando and Tsubasa Yoshihira, all of whom were in the starting lineup. Fujieda created the better chances in the first half, but couldn't score. Toyama took the lead soon after the restart as Ryuya Ohata sent in a cross from the right-hand side. Tojiro Kubo in his own penalty area couldn't deal with the bouncing ball and in trying to do so kicked Himeno. Yoshihira converted the spot kick against his old side, then racing to the touchline to celebrate with Ishizaki. Katane made the point safe with 20 minutes left, Ando sending in a low cross from the left, and Himeno slamming in a half volley. In injury time, Fujieda substitute Naoto Miki had a shot blocked by Toyama keeper Yohei Nishibe as the home side tried to get back into the game to no avail as it ended Fujieda 0, Toyama 2. Only one goal scored in the last four games for My FC, and when thinking back to their free-scoring football under Daisuke Sudo last season, that means something isn't clicking. Katane were in desperate need of the win, and it was their ex-Fujieda trio who provided it. As at table-topping Fukushima, another game decided by a late goal was Tegevajaro Miyazaki against Azul Claro Numazu. Tegevajaro coach Yasushi Takasaki made four changes to the round five starting lineup with star forward Masato Kudo and goalkeeper Shunsuke Ueda both having picked up injuries in the draw at Matsumoto, while Numazu were missing veteran Kazuki Somaya after he was substituted early in the win over Kitakyushu. Miyazaki took a fifth-minute lead when Yuta Shimozawa fed ex-Numazu forward Takuma Sonada. Yuya Tsukegi missed the chance to clear the danger and Sonada fired past Masataka Nomura from 10 yards. The visitors equalised only 6 minutes later, Ryo Watanabe receiving a long ball into the area and taking advantage of a slip by Ko Watahiki to score with a composed finish. In injury time at the end of the first half, a rocket from Numazu captain Takuya Sugai had Miyazaki keeper Rai Shimizu scrambling to tip the ball over the bar. But the decisive moment came 4 minutes into injury time at the end of the second half when Tegevajaro sub Kenta Okuma floated in a free kick. Substitute Keigo Hashimoto got his head to it, and who else but Sonora fired in from close range. Final score, Miyazaki 2, Numazu 1. A first win since the opening day for Tegevajaro, looking set for a season of mid-table consolidation. A blow for Azul Claro after they appeared to be heading for a seventh point in three games. Another tough day at the office for Masahiro Kuzuno and his Vanrari Hachinohe side, who, despite having the bulk of the chances, were beaten at home by Kamatamare Sanuki. On the bizarre patchy playing surface that's broken out at the Pry Foods Stadium, Sanuki keeper Takuya Takahashi had to save well to keep out a close-range volley from birthday boy Ryusei Shimodo on the half-hour, but only 3 minutes later, the visitors were in front. A Mizuki Uchida throw-in was flicked on by Kohei Matsumoto for Kakeru Aoto, who evaded Teppe Chikaishi and slid a 20-yard shot into the bottom corner. Aoto signed in the close season from Kansai League team Okosias Kyoto, made it 2-0 15 minutes into the second half, a penalty awarded when his own shot struck the hand of the unfortunate Shimodo from about 1 yard away. Yusei Kayanuma finally broke his duck in a Vanrare shirt 5 minutes from time, getting the better of Takaharu Nishino and shooting past Takahashi. But it ended Hachinohe 1, Senuki 2. More disappointment for Vanrare, for whom good players like Corky Maezawa and Takumi Shimada are not making an impact, while after Senuki's bargain basement closed season, 7 points from the first six matches must seem like a very positive return. Finally, at the Mikuni World Stadium, Giramantz Kitakyushu and Ehime FC played out a draw that leaves both sides within a point of each other in mid-table. Ehime had the better chances in the first half. Shunsuke Motegi and Shuma Mihara both bringing good saves out of Kenshin Yoshimaru. After the break, the home side were in the ascendancy, Kotaro Fujikawa having a shot from a tight angle hooked off the line by Mihara after a panic in the Ehime defence, and Fujikawa later forcing Kenta Tokushige into action with a superb piece of shot-stopping. With 14 minutes left, Yuya Takazawa missed a golden chance to put Giramantz ahead, but he headed Saw Fujitani's cross wide of the far post. Final score, Kitakyushu 0, Ehime 0. Giramantz again lacking composure in front of goal, although, unlike last week, at least the opposition didn't score four times. Ehime didn't do enough to win the game, but are now unbeaten in three. So now to run through the top and bottom of the league standings after round six, noting that Gifu, Tottori, Hachinohe and Numazu still have a game in hand as a result of their round four postponements. The top four are Fukushima and Kagoshima with 14 points, then it's Matsumoto with 13, slipping to fourth with 11, it's Iwaki. At the other end of the table, the bottom four are Sagamihara, dropping down to 15th with 6 points. Then it's Tottori with 4, Hachinohe 3, and at the bottom with 1, YSCC. Just time now for a quick look ahead to the forthcoming J3-related fixtures. On Thursday, the 21st of April, postponed from round 4, there's the rescheduled game between Hachinohe and Numazu. Then, over the weekend of the 23rd and the 24th, there's a break in the league schedule. While some J3 sides get time off from competitive football, 11 will be taking part in knockout tournaments, the winners of which represent their home prefectures in the Emperor's Cup. Depending on how prefectural football associations organise their tournaments, J3 clubs are fast-tracked to either the semi-finals or finals. Playing in semi-finals then on Saturday the 23rd of April are Ehime FC against Aso FC and FC Imabari against Lebeni Rosso NC, both in Ehime Prefecture. Then on Sunday the 24th, more semi-finals, Fukushima United versus Higashi Nippon International University and Iwaki FC versus Iwaki Furukawa in Fukushima Prefecture. YSCC Yokohama against Toin University of Yokohama and SC Sagamihara against Esperanza SC in Kanagawa Prefecture. AC Nagano Paseiro versus Artista Asama in Nagano Prefecture and Fujieda MyFC against Shizuoka Sangyo University and Azul Claro Numazu against Fujieda City Hall in Shizuoka Prefecture. Playing in local finals on the same day are Gainare Tottori against Yonago Genki SC in Tottori Prefecture and Giramantz Kitakyushu versus Fukuoka University in Fukuoka Prefecture. I'll report in the next episode on the results of all these games. But with all the week's business seen to then, that's it for this mini-pod. All that remains is for me to say thanks for listening, enjoy your football, and see you next time. Bye for now.